TS motherfucking A. We handle shit. That's what we do. Consider this situation fucking handled. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode 47, Get Out and Breaking Structure for Shock Value. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Story Structure and Story Analysis from a Dramatica point of view and from a Narrative First point of view. Dramatica is the theory of story that I, here at Narrative First, use to help writers, producers, and directors make their stories way better. And I do that by helping them find the structure of their story. If you count yourself as a writer or a producer or a director or even a playwright, feel free to get in contact with me and I can either teach you everything I know about the Dramatica theory of story or I can simply help you take your story to the next level. This week's updates, Orson Welles stops by on the blog to talk about the Dramatica story form. I finished Ryan Holiday's book, Perennial Seller, The Art of Making and Marketing Work That Lasts, which is great if you're any kind of a creative, and most likely you are if you're listening to this podcast. It's a great book on how to create work that lasts. The second half is all about marketing, which isn't quite as exciting, although there's a great story in there about the punk band MXPX, I think that's how you say it, talking about longevity and how fame and fortune isn't as important as actually getting a chance to create your art. That stuff was super inspiring, and the first half is really super inspiring. The marketing stuff, not so exciting, unless you want to read about creating an email list, which, if you'd like to sign up for, is at narrativefirst.com/subscribe. In the book, he quotes Orson Welles saying that a movie must be better to see the second or third time than it is the first time. There must be more in it to see it once than any one person can grasp. It must be so meaty, so full of implications, that everyone will get something out of it. And of course, you know what he's talking about. He's talking about a story form. The second or third time that you go through it is usually when you're able to figure out what the story form is. And the reason why you keep being drawn back into the story is because there's something more than just a series of events, a series of things that happened. Everything is tied in together to create this greater meaning. And I had that same experience when I did my analysis of Get Out this week, which is a fantastic thriller horror film from Jordan Peele that I believe made quite a bit of money and only cost, I think, $2 to make. But that doesn't mean it looks like it cost $2 to make. It actually looks great. And I think it got a 98 or 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. And during my analysis or reanalysis of the film, I actually found something completely different than I had found the first time around. And this is exactly what Orson Welles, who is quite a creative guy and created some nice stuff, this is what he's talking about when he says it must be better to see the second or third time. A complete story, which is basically what Orson Welles is talking about, gives the reader something that they can't get in real life, either the reader or the viewer, depending on whether you're writing a novel or a screenplay, whatever it is, whoever the audience is, the intended audience, it gives them something that they can't get in real life, which is meaning. And that's what I used to joke about with my students at the California Institute of the Arts, is that's when I would bring up the fact that life has no meaning, and they thought that was really depressing because they were 19 or 20 and they were excited that life had tons of meaning. And then I explained that it doesn't unless you put it into a narrative context. And that's where I split the class between the people who really get story and the people who don't get story. It is impossible for us to be both within our own subjective experience and without, to view the course of events from an objective point of view. In a story, you actually get both. You get the main character perspective, that internal subjective, and you get the objective. You get to see what it's like from the outside. Put those two together, and you get meaning. You get something more than what is actually in the story itself. A complete story form grants us that taste of the impossible, and that's what Orson Welles is talking about. If you want to guarantee that your audience will get something more out of your work, got to make sure that you give them the gift of a complete story form. Now, at the end, when we talk about Get Out, I'm going to talk about how you give them a gift of a story form, and then you might break a little bit just to create a different kind of experience in your audience. Secondly, I am in the process of creating more gist collections. When I took Narrative First full-time and debarked from the animation industry and directing and storyboarding and animating and took Narrative First full-time, I started to create these gist collections, which are a bunch of gists. If you have the Dramatica Story Expert application, the latest one, it's only on a Mac. If you have that, then you can actually go through and replace a lot of the words that I use for Word of the Week, like conceptualizing, or non-accurate, which was last week's, or projection, which is this week's. You can take those and actually replace them with gists, kind of get the gist of what that element is. And Dramatica ships with about 12,000 gists that you can actually go ahead and plug into your stories and use randomly and create random stories. In fact, last year I had an article where I just randomly spun a story and came up with something that was actually quite cool, I thought. The gist collections range genres from westerns to sci-fi to fantasy to teen sex comedy, and I'm going to add some more gist to that and take it to different levels so that it's higher and lower within the chart. It's easier at the top because when you make gists of something that's very general, you can still get an idea. You can still have a broad spectrum of what that story is going to be. The more concrete or more gist-like that you take the elements down at the bottom, the harder it is to kind of branch off into different storytelling because you're going to be very, very specific because you're getting into the details of it. But I still think it would be interesting to do that. So I am creating more gist collections, and as soon as those are available, I will let you know. Those gist collections are available to Narrative First members, and you can read all about becoming a member at narrativefirst.com/membership. I added a monthly option in there, and in addition to the yearly option that was there already, and a lifetime option. Been here 20 years now with the theory. Probably go another, my birthday was yesterday, so I would say another 40 or 50, if I'm lucky, maybe 55 years of Dramatica. So you can guarantee, no matter what happens, I will always be creating new premium content for you to enjoy. And part of that are the gist collections. And you can read all about that at narrativefirst.com/membership. Now, if you don't know, Melanie Ann Phillips is one of the co-creators of the Dramatica Theory of Story, and she has about 20 different blogs that you can read about Dramatica. No, seriously. Sorry, Melanie. No, the best one is Dramaticapedia. Actually, there are two really good ones, storymind.com and Dramaticapedia. But Dramaticapedia is where there's an actual blog, and she posts new material and new stuff. And she has a really great post last week called How to Structure Your Story Signposts. And the person wrote in, and this is something that I've experienced too, where, and I hear read about it on the forums, people that are new to Dramatica, when they see an overall story signpost, one of learning, they feel like every single element that's in there in the overall story throughline has to somehow refer to learning. And Melanie gives some great advice about not taking everything so literally. Structure should not be applied as rules, but as guidelines. Structure gives you the sense of where the meaning is, where the center of the message is. So in regard to the four signposts, they are like real signposts. They tell you when you have crossed the border from one kind of conjecture to another. So it's a very kind of general thing. It's like, okay, now you're in this area, and then in a little while you're going to be in a new area, but everything doesn't have to relate to it. Theoretically, all the elements underneath are being seen in those different contexts, but the audience will make that connection between the context and the elements without you specifically tying them into the actual signpost. She goes on to say, don't feel that everything that occurs in an act has to somehow connect to the signpost, which is, I guess, basically what I was just saying. The signpost is just like, oh, this is the cool part. The signpost is just like the broth in a soup into which all the other stuff is cooked. It gives each act an identifiable flavor, but can be filled with all kinds of individual tastes that have nothing to do directly with the flavor of the broth. If you just want to be inspired and excited to write, just go on storymind.com. Read anything that Melanie writes. There's a lot there. So you could just read that and get super excited, and then you can just start writing. There's always this thing about connecting Dramatica to cooking. At Chris Huntley's workshops, he would always do the experience versus process, which is something that I snagged for my classes, where he would have people eat a piece of chocolate, and then they would describe the experience of eating the chocolate, which was amazing. It's very subjective, right? It's all about desire and what that feels like and how the experience changes over time, all that stuff. And then he would ask, okay, how do you make a chocolate? Which is all about the knowledge, all about the objective part of it. And that's where most people would stutter and not know exactly how to answer, except there would always be one smartass who knew exactly how chocolate was made. And then they would have both the knowledge and the desire. And I think that's a great way to look at Dramatica and the construction of a story. Stories are like birthday cake. That was another article that I wrote from way back in the very beginning, the story fanatic days, where I went through and talked about this idea that those different story points are like the ingredients in a cake. And I just remembered, as I brought up story fanatic, this is a little update too, this is the birthday of Narrative First. Before, it was called Story Fanatic in 06 or 07 when I started. Called it Story Fanatic because it was all about me. And then 5 years ago, I was strolling around the parking lot at DreamWorks and trying to figure out something that could be my own thing that described how important I thought having an understanding of this theory of story was. And that's when I birthed Narrative First. So it's 5 years. Happy birthday, Narrative First. Melanie goes on to say, "We all think in narrative patterns. Our interests are the topics we explore, but we organize the way we appreciate a topic in narrative, which is nothing more than a framework of meaning that ensures we've looked at all the meaningful parts of a topic from all the pertinent points of view." That's amazing. And then she finishes off by saying, "You don't have to tie every single story point. Don't be so detailed." And the person she's working with, like, probably went overkill in doing it, which is understandable. When you first get into Dramatica, you want to make sure that you get every single thing that's in there and just make sure it all just works together and is the most perfect thing that's ever been made. But really, there are guidelines and frameworks for meaning. And again, that speaks to the analysis of Get Out, where it's not 100% perfect, but it was almost 100% in Rotten Tomatoes. I will leave a link to Melanie's blog and that particular post in the show notes. Weeks back, the word of the week was conceptualizing, and I spoke about how you can actually understand that word by looking to the issues underneath. You can look to state of being, sense of self, situation, and circumstances, because the four items underneath an item in the Dramatica table of story elements actually describes that element at the top. That's why self-interest, morality, approach, and attitude describe obtaining, and truth, evidence, falsehood, and suspicion describe memories. And this is important because when it comes to understanding the difference between conceptualizing and conceiving, which is a problem I had with the Get Out analysis, it can help to look to those items that are underneath. There is a huge difference between conceiving an idea and conceptualizing a plan or conceptualizing a vision. In Ratatouille, the problem is conceiving, the preposterous notion that anyone can cook. Getting that idea that anyone can cook is actually the source of conflict in that story. In American Beauty, redefining your place in modern-day American suburbia, that's where the actual problem is. It's actually figuring out how to fit in and to conceptualize or envision a new life for yourself. It's not just getting the idea is already there. It's actually integrating and figuring out how you fit in. But when that is too difficult to actually determine the difference between the two, and as you will see in the Get Out analysis, I experienced that same difficulty. You can look underneath to the issues. As I mentioned, conceptualizing has state of being, sense of self, situation, and circumstances. Conceiving has permission, deficiency, need, and expediency. Those are some pretty wild out there words. If it's easier, instead of permission, expediency, need, and deficiency, you can think of can, want, need, and should. So need is need. That's the same thing. Permission is basically can or can't. Deficiency is either what you want or what you won't do. It's a lack of. And expediency is should or shouldn't. So can, want, need, should, permission, deficiency, need, and expediency. Those are the eight issues underneath conceiving and conceptualizing. So if you're looking for the actual source of conflict within a concern, you look to those issues. So scheming to get drugs and reimagining one's concept of oneself appears to indicate a state of being gay. And that's how Chris Cooper's character, the Colonel Fitz character, sees Lester, the Kevin Spacey character. There's conflict there. There's an inequity there. Climbing the ladder of real estate and conceptualizing a better life involves engaging in an illicit affair. That's a situation. She's putting herself in a bad situation. That's Carolyn, the Annette Bening character. Figuring out where one fits into the high school social system alienates Jane from Angela. That's the Thora Birch character from Mina Suvari. And that describes an issue of sense of self, because that's propelling or motivating that conflict there and describing the inequity between those two from an objective point of view. And remaining catatonic in order to fit into suburbia with an obviously gay husband creates acceptable circumstances for Fitz's wife, Barbara, the Allison Janney character. So there you have state of being, sense of self, situation, and circumstances. But it's not just American Beauty, and I realize I talked about this a couple podcasts back. It also applies to Star Wars. Everybody loves Star Wars, right? It's the go-to story structure film. Well, most people would look at Star Wars and think that the concern is obtaining. I know the first time that I opened up Dramatica and put those 3.5-inch discs into my PC and loaded it up to create my great story about a pyramid buried under the ice in Antarctica, that the first thing I went to was obtaining, because how the heck could a story be about anything else but trying to achieve something? Underneath obtaining, you will see approach, attitude, self-interest, and morality. And in the case of Star Wars, obtaining would be obtaining the Death Star plans and destroying the Death Star, right? That would be achieving a victory over the Empire. But those issues don't really sync up as well as those issues did with American Beauty. Self-interest, I don't even know. Yeah, I guess maybe Han is a little self-interested and maybe a bit of the Empire, but I'm not sure about anybody else. Morality, doing things for somebody else, I'm not sure if that's part of the conversation, you know, compared to something like The Matrix, where that is a huge part of the conversation. Or approach or attitude. I could see attitude again with Han, but approach, it's not really, you know, how they approach the Death Star at the end isn't. That's not a significant thematic touch point. As opposed to wisdom, enlightenment, skill, and experience. There are actual deep conversations about the skills. You know, I can fly this thing. I'm better than you. I can fly this thing better than you. You know, it beat the Kessel Run in 0.5 parsecs or whatever the heck that was. And, you know, the experience. You know, I've been out here longer than you. I know exactly what's going on. I'm more familiar with these people. You don't know what to expect. And wisdom. It's not wise to upset a Wookiee. You know, well, no one ever worries about upsetting a droid. And that's because the Wookiees have the skill to rip your arms off. And enlightenment, that's the Force. I mean, that's the issue there of the Force. And that conversation between Darth and the colonels, or whatever you'd call them, that run the Death Star. There's a lot of wisdom versus enlightenment in there. It's a thematic concern. So you can see how wisdom, enlightenment, skill, and experience are actually sources of conflict in Star Wars, much more so than approach, attitude, self-interest, and morality. And that's why the overall story concern of Star Wars is doing. It's not about actually obtaining and destroying all this stuff. It's actually about fighting back and who is the better doer. Who can do things better than the other person? Or which side can do things better than the other side? That's where the source of conflict is. So that is a great example of where you can actually look to the issues underneath the concerns to help you understand where the source of conflict is. And again, I keep talking about the source of conflict over and over again, and I would love to find new ways to explain it, but the Dramatica model, the whole Dramatica story form, which is what Orson Welles was talking about, is all about where that source of conflict is coming from, that framework of narrative that you're creating, that Melanie was speaking about. That framework describes where the actual conflict in your story is coming from, because conflict is all about an imbalance between things and inequity. Another really good example I was thinking of was The Fugitive. A lot of people, when they first come to Dramatica, they don't understand why the overall story of Fugitive is in situation and the main character is in activity. And of course, I feel the exact same way when I first came to it, because clearly he's the situation character. I mean, he's been unjustly accused and everybody's out to get him, and the activity is finding the one-armed man and stopping him. But when you dive into the issues and actually start to explore where the conflict is felt in the story, you get a very different perspective of how things are laid out. Underneath obtaining, again, we have self-interest, morality, approach, and attitude. And I'm not really sure, beyond Dr. Richard Kimball, where else you see approach and attitude. Maybe you see attitude from the Tommy Lee Jones character. I'm not sure about the other ones. Joey Pants doesn't really have that big of an attitude. Approach, the approaches aren't really in conflict there. Self-interest, that's not really about doing things for yourself in regards to other people. Maybe the doctor, but I mean, that's not really part of the story. That's kind of a wraparound of the story of him being selfishly motivated at the beginning and at the end. You don't really get a feel for that. As opposed to the issues underneath a concern of future. There you will find preconception, openness, delay, and choice. Obviously, delay, I mean, the whole thing is about Kimball putting off being thrown into jail. The whole balance in the story is between him delaying and then choosing whether or not to go back into town or put himself at risk. I didn't kill my wife. I don't care. I'm choosing to not even think twice about what it is that you're telling me, which then leads into preconception. I mean, the issue of preconception is so strong, and I believe it's actually the overall story issue, where everybody just, this guy's guilty. There's no other way to think of it. I mean, he has to be guilty against openness, which actually that's probably where the I don't care, you know, or where he's actually becoming more open towards Richard Kimble. You'll find more instances of conflict in the overall, from an overall story perspective, under future with delay, choice, preconception, and openness, than you would under obtaining self-interest, morality, approach, and attitude. You'll find bits and pieces there because, as Melanie said, it's not perfect. It's just a framework of meaning, a framework of structure. But you will find one that's more heavily weighted. And then when you go and put in the other perspectives, like the main character through line, influence character through line, and the relationship story through line, you'll start to find an arrangement that feels more weighted, more closer to identifying the source of conflict than any other arrangement. And that's where you will find that Richard Kimble fits better in obtaining, with self-interest, obviously, morality, when he can't help himself but actually put himself in danger to help out other injured people in the hospital. Approach, I mean, he just keeps going in and he's very bold and just doesn't, you know, waste any time. And attitude, which is, you know, he's coming into conflict with people's attitudes over whether or not they're even going to listen to what he has to say. So when it comes to identifying the source of conflict in a story, and that's what dramatic is all about, that's what the whole framework of meaning is all about, you want to look to the issues underneath the concerns to help you better understand those concerns. The concerns are, for the most part, easier to understand than the issues because they seem very siloed off and they seem very understandable and easy to get. Learning, understanding, doing, and obtaining are infinitely more easier to understand than fate, destiny, interdiction, prediction, prerequisites, preconditions, strategy, analysis, all those. And if you want to know my trick to knowing exactly where everything is in the dramatical model, this is my little trick. When I have blood drawn and I don't want to pass out, because I always have a huge fear of passing out when blood is drawn, I stare up at the ceiling, those ceiling tiles, and I imagine the dramatic table of story elements, and I work my way through upper left to lower right, and I go fate, prediction, interdiction, destiny, ow, fact, security, threat, fantasy, oh God, openness, delay, choice, preconception. That's how I did it. Luckily, I've only had to go through the issues in order to memorize where they all are. So if you want to memorize where they all are, and you want a perfect opportunity to do that, the next time you have to give blood and you don't want to pass out, that would be a perfect time to do it. So be sure to check out this week's article for a more in-depth discussion of this idea of looking towards the issues to help you understand the concerns. Brings us to my Get Out analysis. Now, when I first saw this film, I was super excited. It was one of three films that I'd watched in a single day: Logan, Get Out, and A Monster Calls. And I couldn't believe that I had picked three films that all had really strong story forms. And I was really excited to do this one, particularly because it was a 98%, but I think now it's 99%. And I always love to find an opportunity to push or to emphasize this strength of having a story form for your story and how important it is. It's always great to have amazing examples of this in action. But of course, when I watched it, there was something really odd about the ending. I'm going to be spoiling a lot of the film for you. So if you haven't seen the film, I implore you to go do so before you actually listen to this podcast. You'll learn more about what actually goes on in the film and in narrative structure, and you'll get a chance to experience a really great film, because I'm going to ruin it for you, and that's not fun. So if you haven't seen it, you need to stop the podcast and go see it immediately, and then come back. Welcome back. Hey, how's it going? They always do that in books, and I never do when they ask me, so you probably didn't do it. Whenever they say, hey, step down and take out a piece of paper and write down the 10 things that make you happy, I always just keep reading. Even if they say, come on, do it. You have to. You'll get more out of it. So I'm sure you just did the same thing. So when I was watching the film, I thought it was perfect. I loved it up until the end, and I felt cheated. I was like, well, it's funny. That's a funny ending when he comes out and he says his line, you know. T.S. motherfucking A. We handle shit. That's what we do. consider this situation fucking handled. I thought it was funny. Of course, it was hilarious, but I felt cheated. I felt like there's something wrong with the story, and I really couldn't put my finger on it. The days after, when I'm out and about and running, which is usually when I figure out all the story forms in my head, I realized what the story form was, and I was super excited. I came back, wrote it down, and in 2-3 months later, I finally had an opportunity to sit down and start writing it, and I began to write my analysis of it. And in the process of actually writing the analysis, I actually learned something really, really interesting. So when I was out running, I got the idea that it was an overall story concern of conceiving and a problem of reduction, because I felt that what Peel was trying to get across was this reductive way of thinking, that the African-American community was reductive in their thinking less of themselves, which is what was generating their predicament, where they're either ending up as slaves, or Chris himself was in this place where he just kind of let everybody have all these understandings of him, or these assumptions about who he was and what he was capable of doing, and they were kind of reducing him down to an object, to a slave. And I thought that was great, and I thought, well, that works great, because at the end, his solution is production, and he makes a big production when he goes around and kills everybody. I thought that was it. That was great. So I actually started to write the analysis. Now, I didn't actually change these words from my very first time I was writing it, and this is what I wrote. Get Out tells the story of photographer Chris Washington and his weekend spent meeting the parents of his girlfriend, Rose Armitage, at her parents' estate in upstate New York. Strange encounters with groundskeeper Walter and maid Georgina unlock a complex scheme of therapeutic hypnosis and brain surgery designed to prolong the lives of ailing and able white people. Manipulating black victims into the sunken place to prepare them for transfer centralizes conflict in the psychology domain for the overall story through line with an emphasis or overall story concern in conceptualizing, developing a plan. I didn't even realize that I wrote conceptualizing. I meant to write conceiving, but I wrote conceptualizing, and I followed it up with this paragraph. Dark and foreboding psychological dramas like Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, Rear Window, Sunset Boulevard, and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf share this common source of conflict in psychology and conceptualizing, placing Get Out in good company. So all was well and good. I finished the analysis, took me a couple days to write and rewrite, and then when I was preparing it in my mind for how it would all lay in with everything else that I was doing for Narrative First during the week, it occurred to me that I screwed up. I couldn't believe that I had put it in conceptualizing. I mean, it did match those other psychological dramas and horror films, and I felt that was exactly where Peele had wanted it to be. And then I started to realize, well, maybe I had the story form wrong. Maybe reduction isn't the problem, and maybe production isn't the solution. And that's when I landed upon equity as the problem. It's so clearly equity, especially when you see the symptom and response, the symptom of aware, what you're aware of, like all this crazy stuff that's going on around you, or what you're not aware of, why you behave the way that you do, and then self-aware, where you're just like, that's the therapy, that's the response, the direction that the narrative actually takes. Aware and self-aware, those are key in the film. And I, for some reason, I was just locked in. I think it's because the trend of everything recently has been the lower right, which is learning, conceptualizing, present, and conscious. And if you don't know this, a narrative will focus its story concerns in the same general area for the four through lines. That's how you keep consistency across the narratives. That's how you keep that consistency in the framework. And so for some reason, I was thinking that it was going to be conceiving, learning, and the present and conscious, I think just out of habit. But when you put it in equity, that makes more sense, because the schemes of the Armitage family are to balance out the injustice that they feel, you know, to bring some justice to how they felt that they were treated, or how dear old dad was treated way back when by Jesse Owens. And this is a way to kind of balance out the physical superiority of the African-American community with the intellectual superiority of the white community. It's a way to balance it out. That's where their scheme is coming from. And of course, Chris, because of who he is just wants to keep the peace. Doesn't want to mess things up. You know, when the officer asks him for a state ID, he's got it. It's no big deal. That's where his personal issue is coming from. The genius of Get Out lies in that connection between Chris's personal issues and the issues suffered by the rest of the cast at the hands of the Armitage family. Both the main character problem and overall story problem share that similar focus on equity. Sometimes, as Chris later learns, a little inequity is needed to move things forward. This drive towards equity also reduces capable and productive members of society to sniveling and affable slaves, happy to keep peace with their masters at all costs. And it's interesting because subconsciously I knew exactly where the story form was, but consciously I didn't. Consciously I thought it was conceiving. And then again, 2 or 3 months later, I'm actually able to understand where the story form is because all the noise of the experience of actually watching the film and being shocked and scared to death, that clears away and you're actually able to see the meaning of the story that you're actually trying to tell. And this is what happened when I was writing the analysis. I wrote conceptualizing. I didn't even realize I was writing conceptualizing, but that's exactly where the source of conflict is in the story. I mean, it gets back to the issues that I was talking about in the article this week. State of being, sense of self, situation, and circumstances. That describes the Armitage family and Chris to a T, especially Georgina and Walter, and Rose as well. You know, this sense of self, this sense of entitlement, and the circumstances that Georgina and Walter feel. That's a more accurate interpretation of where conflict is coming from, rather than permission, deficiency, need, and expediency. Can, want, need, and should. Those don't even actually fit into the narrative. Now that I think about it, I'm not even sure why I thought that. My original idea was that the issue was an expediency and should or shouldn't, and that's not what the story is actually about at all. It's about those emotional circumstances, about being beaten by a black man on the world stage in front of everyone, you know, that humiliating feeling, that circumstance that created the drive within the Armitage family to create the Coagula. That's where the actual issue in the overall story is coming from. And then the corresponding issues and concerns in the relationship story, the relationship between Chris and Georgina and Walter, the people that have already been overtaken, those two, originally I thought learning, because he's learning, you know, what happened to them, prerequisites, preconditions, strategy, and analysis don't quite describe the actual horror that is actually there in the misunderstandings or trying to figure out what is wrong with these people in terms of instinct, the instinct to flee, or just like, holy, what the heck is going on here when this guy's running right at me? Conditioning too. He's conditioning himself. Conditioned not to run or going out to smoke, and that's where the relationship begins, or where that conflict between their, or within their relationship, with the genesis of it, and senses and interpretation. Those are much stronger than prerequisites, preconditions, strategy, and analysis. So you can see, subconsciously, I was working my way to that point, and I guess I just, because I've done this so much, I realized that's where the actual source of conflict was. But if you're doing it for yourself, you always want to look at those issues. That'll save you a whole lot of time. So once I set it to equity and set the overall story concern to conceptualizing, that put the main character concern in memories, which was much stronger than contemplations. It put the influence character in the past, which I felt was much stronger in regards to Georgina and Walter, at least the peoples whose bodies they had inhabited. You can see how they're connected with that you and I. They're stuck as slaves in the external world. I mean, they're stuck without being able to have their thoughts anymore. All they can do is control their motor functions, and they're stuck in the external world while Chris is stuck in the internal world. They're stuck as slaves in the external world, and Chris is stuck as a slave to that attitude that just kind of justifies and allows racist behavior because, hey, I just want to keep the peace. I think that's where the genius of the film comes from, is the juxtaposition of those two points of view, with the main character of Chris in fixed attitude and the influence character with those bodies that Georgina and Walter overtake. So two things happened when I had to switch it to the overall story concern of conceptualizing. One was the entire story form just played out exactly as it should have. And I've had so much experience with figuring out these story forms and analyzing film, I understood that I was on the right track. And I was really excited about that because I could tell that this was the right story form. One was the main character issue of falsehood, which I previously thought was doubt, that he doubted himself. Really, his issue was this idea when he was a little kid that if he thought something awful, it would actually happen. When Mrs. Armitage asked him during the therapy session, why didn't you call someone, your aunt or the police, Chris just answers, I don't know. I thought if I did, it would make it real. So that lie or that falsehood Chris told himself led to his mother's death, or at least he believes it led to his mother's death, and generated the guilt he feels in regards to her passing. So that main character issue of falsehood, that's the core of who he is, and it makes sense that he gets to that core of who he is through the therapy session when he gets to that sunken place. With a problem of equity, the solution is inequity. So the solution for Chris is to remove this idea of life isn't fair. Remember when he's talking to the blind guy and he says, yeah, shit isn't fair. He represents inequity in the overall story through line, even though he's motivated by equity. And there's a whole explanation for that, but he brings that into the conversation in the overall story. His solution is to remove that from that conversation and instead use it to get out from under his own personal justifications of just trying to keep the peace all the time. He changes by accepting that sometimes accidents just happen. And exiting the car to retrieve the fallen Georgina confirms that change. He moves into inequity, takes it out of the conversation, and puts it into himself, and does something that's basically incites or brings inequity into his life. Unfortunately, by removing it from that broader perspective, he allows justice and equity to overwhelm the balance of conflict in the overall story through line. His actions, from the bocce ball to the stranglehold, fight fire with fire, confirming white America's concept of the modern black man and the hidden racism underneath. He rises to meet his fate on that windy road, only to find his best friend Rod behind the flashing blue and red lights, not local authorities, as was originally shot and written. And that's the problem that I had with the film the first time around. Peele had written this story, had created an entire narrative, created a framework of meaning that ended the overall story in failure. When the main character takes their element of the overall story and then puts it into themselves, that creates a change-failure dynamic. So he changes his perspective, but he changes by taking it, you know, his overall story. He actually had the solution. He takes that, puts it in himself, and creates a failure in the overall story through line. That's what everybody expects. So when those flashing blue and red lights come up, you expect that it's going to be local authorities, it's going to be the cops, and they're going to take him away. And that's why Marnie's smiling. If you've ever watched Girls, you're going to love this film because she gets what Marnie deserves. When they show up, you expect it to be the police officers, you expect it to be the local authorities, and they're just going to continue that cycle of racism. And in the alternate ending, which I'll leave a link to, it's on YouTube, or you can see it if you have the DVD or iTunes in the extra section. He ends up in jail, and of course his friend Rod is trying to get him to, like, hey, help me put the pieces together. Rod is the protagonist in the story. He's the one doing all the conceptualizing. And he's just like, nah, I'm done. I'm good. You know, I beat it. He beat them, and he beat his own personal demons. And it's interesting, too, because when I was watching, I wasn't sure. I felt overall it was supposed to be a story judgment of good. I felt that was the point of him going back. But if you're just going off the acting, it's not quite clear, at least in the original ending. The alternate ending, it's a little more clear. But in the alternate ending, he kind of leaves it up. And I think that's because they're still trying to get that bittersweet feeling from a success bad that you get in a failure good story, but that doesn't even make sense with the meaning of the rest of the story. But it's great if you listen to the actual commentary. Peele acknowledges that he wanted to show that Chris had gotten over his own personal demons, which is an easy hoop shot for the story judgment of good. So now I had an understanding of why I felt that the story was actually broken. He did break the structure when he made the film. He had written and created this great masterpiece of a change failure story, and then at the end, because he was worried about where the conversation was going socially in and around, and he just loved the idea, the reaction that he got from everybody, is he just broke structure. You set up this expectation in the audience's mind. Everybody has a story mind. That's why Dramatica works. That's why narrative works the way that it does, is because everybody has a mind, and they all process and solve problems in the same way. They might not do it exactly the same way or come up with the same solutions, but they all work it the same way. And so everybody expects that it's going to be cops there at the end. And when it's not, when he breaks it, that's when you get that shock value. And you're like, ah, that's great. You know, and then he delivers his line and it's fun and you feel good. But really deep down inside, you still know that it's supposed to be failure. So he's still getting that message across. I mean, he explains, and it's great because we have all these podcast interviews with him. And he explains in one interview that the whole point of the film, which was, we're in this post-racial world, apparently. We've got Obama, so racism is over, so let's not talk about it. That's what the movie was meant to address. If you don't already know, racism isn't over. The ending in that era was to say, look, and he's talking about the ending, the original ending where he ends up in jail, where Chris ends up in jail. Look, you think race isn't an issue? Well, at the end, we all know this is how this movie would end right here. Well, the reason why we know why this movie will end this way is because of the story form you set up, because of the actual story that you told. And I love this too, because this confirms the overall story problem of Equity, that there's this balance kind of underrunning everything, like everything is okay and there's peace. That is what's running the overall story through line, and that's also what's running Chris's main character through line, and that's how the two of them work together. This is great. So you have confirmation here of what the actual story form is, and you have confirmation of him changing his original intent to create shock value. Everybody expects it to end in failure, and when it doesn't, it kind of ends in success. That breaks the story. And if you want to have a great way or a great approach to creating tremendous shock value and to give them something that they totally didn't expect, in a way that's different from like the Sixth Sense ending, where that's actually part of the story form, if you want to completely break it and break it in a way, I think this works too because it's a comedic moment and you want that uplifting moment, you can do it just the way that they did with Get Out. And it gets back to my original gut feeling when I saw the film, when I felt that there was something wrong with the ending. And I went back and forth on my analysis. I was trying to figure out, well, what is the success? What is the failure? What is the actual conceptualizing that's going on? A success would mean that there was actually some conceptualizing that happened, that the plan actually worked out, or they were able to figure out all the pieces. But if there is a failure, that would mean there was a failure to conceptualize and a consequence of understanding. Dramatica has this great thing where it has the goal and consequence of a narrative, not just the goal, but it has a consequence that balances out. So you can tell where a film is going to fail and where a film is going to succeed. If the story is going to succeed, it'll hit the goal. If it's going to fail, it's going to hit the story consequence. And they're balanced out together in the table of story elements. So in this story, when you have a story goal of conceptualizing, which was the right goal once I figured out that it wasn't conceiving, the ending was the consequence at the end would be understanding, and here it would be misunderstandings. And that felt great if local authorities showed up. If local authorities showed up and they brought out their guns and saw, well, geez, look, this guy just killed all these white people, he's going to jail, that's the understanding. It's kind of a misunderstanding, and that would fit with a failure story form. Success and failure, the story outcome of a narrative, dictates the plot progression of events in a narrative. Getting back to Melanie's blog post about the signposts, those signposts that her writer was trying to hit, those are all engineered to create the meaning of the story that that writer was trying to tell, the message that they're trying to get across. And the plot progression of a success story differs from the plot progression of a failure story. With all the other story points set in to Get Out, you know, all the first 90 minutes of the film, first 95 minutes of the film before that last scene, you get two different options for story forms. If it's success, the plot progression will be conceptualizing to conceiving to being to becoming. Those four things: conceptualizing, conceiving, being, and becoming. And you can see why it becomes important to know what those issues are underneath. A failure ending, a failure story form, would be conceiving, conceptualizing, becoming, and being. It's very interesting. They're both divided down the middle, with conceiving and conceptualizing at the beginning, and then being and becoming in the second half, but they're just flopped. Very cool. I don't know why that is, but that's why it works out. And my problem was when I was writing it originally, when I had the conceiving, I thought, well, yeah, that's they get the idea at the end of what's going on. I don't know what I was arguing now. It doesn't even make sense to me. The success story form made more sense to me. Like, they conceptualize, hey, what are you guys doing? What's this thing that's going on? And then the conceiving, it's like, what are these people doing? And then once that guy flips out, when Andre Hayworth flips out, when the light bulb flashes in his eye, then everybody starts to pretend. That would be being. And then becoming, I thought, well, yeah, Chris is changing enough. That doesn't even make sense to me anymore, because that's not the actual story that was told. The one that's told goes from conceiving to conceptualizing to becoming and being. In the first act, Chris worries over Rose's parents getting the wrong idea and the Armitage family trying to get Chris to conceive of quitting smoking through hypnosis. There's a lot of conceiving that's going on there. That's describing the area of exploration, as Melanie discussed in her blog post. The second act, which is after the therapy, finds best friend and TSA agent Rod imagining all kinds of horrible scenarios where white people hypnotize black men to use them as sex slaves, while Chris tries to figure out who keeps unplugging his phone. That's where all the conceptualizing is going in. And then you have Andre, he freaks out, and he's, you know, tells him to get out, get out, get out. And it's not pretending when Andre emerges from Mrs. Armitage's study. It's that he's been completely transformed, and now he's this completely different person. And then the Armitage family itself, they totally change their nature. I mean, they're really creepy. The brother's up there plucking those strings, And then Dad and Mom look creepy. Everybody's just, like, circling around Chris, because now they're just, it's turning to a horror film. Until finally Rose, you know, says, I can't give you the keys. And then that's when Chris knows I'm screwed. And then that's when all the pretending, that's when all the being actually happens. That's when she calls up Rod and explains, oh, where's Chris? Have you, like, that's where the being comes in. And then, I don't know why I missed this, but Chris pretending to be hypnotized, to be out, when he's already picked the cotton, which I thought was brilliant. That's being, and then him fulfilling that role of this, like, physically powerful and savage beast that all the Armitage family thinks that, you know, black men actually are. That's why they took advantage of him. He actually fulfills that role and actually impales the father with the buck, which I found out later was actually a racial slur used after post-Reconstruction era to label black men who just didn't pay attention and do what they were supposed to. That was brilliant. There's so much brilliant stuff in this film. That, to me, just confirmed. And then, of course, Marnie at the end telling him that she loves him. That's all being. Okay, so conceiving, conceptualizing, becoming, and being, that's a failure story. The organization, the plot progression of events that actually happened, those areas of exploration, dictated a failure story. So when you get to the end, you expect and know that there are going to be police officers coming out of that car, and then Peele breaks it by having Rod show up and say his line and say, let's get out of here. So he actually broke structure to create shock value. And he did that because he noticed people were getting more upset and angrier with the deaths of black men in the real world, and he wanted to position the ending with Chris as a hero rather than a victim. So it's shocking, not because just out of nowhere. It's actually shocking because it breaks the story form. It breaks that shared story mind that everybody in the audience shares with one another. They're actually, everybody is going along that same experience, that same ride, and they just know that it's going to end up in failure because of everything that's come before. And then, of course, he breaks it by delivering a success. The story form contains the message of the author's original intent. It contains that message that Peele is trying to get across. The dissonance between the original ending where he ends up in jail and the socially acceptable ending where Rod shows up perfectly illustrates the mechanism underlying a functioning narrative. Understanding the key story points of a narrative makes it possible for an author to play against audience expectation and deliver something quite remarkable. By manipulating the audience into expecting one outcome and delivering another, writer-director Peele breaks structure to his and our advantage. In some ways, this inequity coincides with the story form by giving us a clue as to how to put the pieces together towards a new concept of relating to one another. Instead of simply showing us the current state of affairs and yet another account of a small and personal triumph, Peele offers us a vision of a way out, the triumph of the unimaginable. That's it for this week's podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please write to me at narrativefirst.com/contact. If you would like to develop your sense of story and learn more about the Dramatica theory of story and the narrative first approach, you'll want to check out the Dramatica mentorship program at narrativefirst.com/mentor. Have a great week of writing, and I'll see you next time.